Welcome to the Food Matters Live podcast, where we showcase the innovations, the big ideas, and the visionaries in the food industry. We dig deep, we look to the future and the past, and we question everything we think we know about food. I'm Anthony Zara, and this episode has been made in partnership with Tetra Pak. Now, how do we make our food systems more sustainable? It's a big question, and it's a huge challenge. We know the food industry has a big impact on the climate and the environment, but we need to keep everyone fed. We also know that some of the processes we use to make food could be improved to lessen their impact on the world around us. But with many complicated processes involved, these changes aren't always easy to make. So we're going to look at what can be done and how we can go about doing it. With me to discuss food systems transformation is Gilles Tisserand, Vice President of Climate and Biodiversity at Tetra Pak. Welcome to the podcast, Gilles.
Thank you.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you. So maybe a good place to start is if you can explain, what do we mean when we talk about food systems transformation?
Yeah, well, actually, we start from an observation, which is that our food systems are not sustainable in the sense that currently food systems account for more than one third of the greenhouse gas emissions. They're a significant user of scarce resources, let it be land, water, energy. So that's one side of the inefficiency and sustainability. And then furthermore, if you look at it, there's a vast amount of food which is produced that gets wasted. At the same time, you have billions of people that cannot access sufficient food regularly. So that needs to change. And that's where Tetra Pak wants to play its part.
Okay. All right. Well, let's get into it then. So can you tell me a bit about Tetra Pak's approach to food systems transformation?
Yeah. Well, Tetra Pak is known by, I would say, the main public for its packaging. The reality is that we are much more than a packaging company. We have processing solutions, so this is solutions for the food players, and our global presence, integrated solutions for the processing and packaging of food, put us really at the heart of the world's food system. So with that comes a responsibility, and we are really committed to play our part to help those food systems become more secure, more resilient, and more sustainable. Reason why, actually, quite recently, end of last year, we outlined four key pathways to turn our ambitions into actions with roadmap and targets for each of the pathway. And that has been also put in line with the Food and Land Use Coalition. Among the pathway, I think one which is important, and I'm sure that we'll talk about it in more depth, is enabling the transition towards more sustainable dairy by addressing environmental impacts of dairy processing, helping small older farmers, because that's also important. We tend to forget that a lot of people in the world do rely on actually producing dairy. And an example of target that we have put in place is reducing the greenhouse gas emissions of our processing equipment by 50% by 2030. A second pillar pathway that I think is also quite critical to understand is contributing to reducing food loss and waste. I've mentioned that one third of the food that is being produced is getting wasted in the world. That turns into actually greenhouse gas, climate impact, impact on the soil quality, impact on the fact that many people can't access food. And that's where, when you look into how you produce food, of course, you have to grow the raw ingredients. But then you have to process it and to ensure that it is being packed in the right way. And that's where Tetra Pak plays an important role. And typically, we have a target in place to reduce the product loss in our processing lines by 50% by 2030. The two other pathways are also critical. Okay, one of it is about innovating for new food resources, especially thinking about alternative protein sources that require less resource-intensive supply chain. And that's where we have targets to accelerate, actually to triple the sales of our plant-based and new food processing equipment. Think about fermentation as an example of a super interesting technology to being able to produce protein. And finally, the last pathway that we have identified and behind which we are putting lots of resources, is to scale the access to safe nutrition through sustainable food packaging. And that's where our packaging offer business portfolio gets into the picture, because thanks to our especially aseptic portfolio, we can increase the global access to safe and nutritious food all over the world. And our aim is to actually increase those sales of ambient packaging by 2 billion liters by 2030.
Okay. Obviously, we have a lot of people within the food industry who listen to this podcast. And I just wonder, what should industry players know about contributing to food systems transformation?
Well, you know, at the end of the day, I think we need to have a science-based approach. So the first step is to understand, for every company to understand what are their economic, environmental, and societal impact. Once you've done that understanding of your impact, and by the way, there are regulations, especially at EU level, but also in China, pushing companies to do what we call double materiality analysis. Once you've done that exercise of understanding your impact, that's where you can put together a plan with goals and targets in place. Example of frameworks that I can think of, actually in the world of climate, which is one of my tasks at Tetra Pak, one of the frameworks that I can think of is SBTI, Science-Based Target Initiatives. Actually, Tetra Pak was one of the first company to have its targets on climate verified by SBTI. And today, only 34% of companies worldwide that represent a third of the global economy have achieved that accreditation with SBTI. So industrial in the world of food have that duty to understand, map, and put a plan in place which should be verified externally. And we know typically that industrial supply chains are complex, but they need to be dealt with as a whole. And that's where you also find activities, initiatives such as the Dairy Posting Task Force that we have created with others are super interesting initiatives. I can also think about the contribution that we have as Tetra Pak to the global dairy sectors through the Pathways to Dairy Net Zero initiative. So I can also only encourage companies to go out to discuss and engage into industry coalition. Another good example that I can think of is the participation of Tetra Pak to the World Business Council for Sustainable Development, which is a global CEO-led company of over 200 business on issues like protecting nature, tackling inequality, moving food forward. And I can tell you that by experience, this is a place, a forum where you learn a lot and where you can actually have an influence in bringing the whole industry with you towards sustainable improvement.
And was that the catalyst behind your recent 2040 food systems white paper?
Well, definitely, yes. This white paper, which you can find on tetrapak.com website, has been done in collaboration with EY Parthenon, and it explores the opportunities, the enablers, the critical success factors for what should be a preferred future by 2040, preferred future in the world of food. And in this paper, we highlight, in a way, the critical issues, the objectives that need to address 2040. And that's where our four pathway that I've described gets into the picture. So it really aims to inspire decision makers to rethink the art of the possible, but also to determine specific objectives, actions that will drive the transition forward.
Okay, you mentioned earlier about dairy and some of the initiatives there. Can we get into that a little bit more? And maybe we can go into a bit more detail on what Tetra Pak's role is in decarbonizing the dairy industry.
Well, I know that dairy is criticized, has been criticized, especially for its impact on greenhouse gas, its impact on use of land, and we can't deny it. As an example, the dairy industry, right, generates 2.7%, I'm very precise, of the total greenhouse gas emissions worldwide. So that's quite important. At the same time, we always need to remember that dairy products provide essential nutrients, essential proteins, and livelihoods, salaries to many around the world. So it's a critical ingredient. So when we look into the trend, dairy consumption is expected to grow in developing countries and to stabilize in the major ones. It doesn't mean that the production, by the way, will go to the developing countries because dairy needs specific conditions in a way to happen. But that's also where food processing play an essential role in that dairy value chain. And food processing, so when you transform your product and then you pack it, is a key enabler for safe and actually more sustainable dairy. Because you can preserve milk for months without the need of preservative or refrigeration. So you, in a way, improve the resource efficiency. And by having efficient processing, you have the potential to reduce energy and water use as well as food losses. And that's why, as part of our pathway, enabling the transition towards more sustainable dairy, we have that commitment to reduce greenhouse gas emissions in the dairy ambient processing equipment by 50% by 2030. I've mentioned the pathway to dairy net zero, which we have recently signed up to. And we've been the initiative, like we are leading that global dairy processing task force, working with customers and the broader dairy value chain to explore the innovative systems, technologies need to further drive down greenhouse gas emissions in the dairy processing. I can think of several examples, but one that to me highlights a massive decarbonization at the same time, actually, technology is if you look at the world of dairy powder. Dairy powder is used a lot in the industry. You then can use it to make ice cream, to actually make cheese in some part of the world, to make milk in some part of the world. And it's a technology that is heavily used by most, if not all, the big dairy players. Historically, to have powder, you needed gas so that you could produce here heat. What Tetra Pak has managed to do is develop a technology to use electricity, actually, to transform a liquid into powder. And by using electricity, what you do is then you open the door to being able to source a renewable electricity, which comes with a much lower carbon footprint. We have example in the Netherlands with a production that comes basically with minus 80% greenhouse gas emissions, and it's a save overall in the total cost for that customer. So that's a good example of how actually we can change the system through technology, through processing technology. Now, to me, the second leg is also super important. When we think sustainability, we always think environment. We need to not forget the people in the world. Many, and that's very true in the developing countries, many smallholder farmers are living thanks to the dairy production. And here, the role that Tetra Pak can play is actually through the concept of Dairy Hub. So what happens is that we have, actually since 2011, opened 25 dairy hubs around the world, and we have enabled close to 80,000 farmers to bring their milk in those dairy hubs so that it's being processed, treated, and then transformed into a product. So you secure revenue, you secure that milk is not getting spoiled or wasted. So it's kind of a win-win move as well. And that's where from 80 now, we aim to reach 100 thousand smallholder farmers to be addressed with our Dairy Hub concept by 2030.
Fantastic. And thank you for that real world example, because I think that really helps to bring these issues to life for people. Looking at a global food security then, so, I mean, how important is it that we find new sources of food to address the issue we're facing?
Yeah. Well, in the intro, we basically talked about that observation of an unsustainable food system. Then there's also another reality is that the global population is expected to increase by more than 25% between 2020 and 2050, so close to 10 billion people. In that context, the world will need an increase in food production. Actually, we expect the food production increase to have to go above plus 50% to be able to meet the dietary needs of that population. In that context, food security has to be ensured. We need a resilient food system. And because of climate change, actually, the ability of the world to produce food the way we are producing today, our ability to source the same raw material, wheat and dairy and fruits, is being challenged by climate change. So in that context, we can only embrace, I would say, new food source, thinking about plant-based food, thinking about alternative protein, and we need to integrate innovative technology to being able to produce food while using fewer natural resources. What we have been doing at Tetra Pak is actually back from the 80s, really grow an expertise on soy, almond, or oat treatment to be able to process those cereals into protein and liquid and milk. And we are right now building expertise on other type of protein, let it be algae as an example, or insects as an example. And to be able also to push that knowledge. Recently, actually in 2023, we partnered with the Lund University in Sweden, the home of Tetra Pak, to launch a research hub called Biotech Heights, where we explore food and materials production using bioprocessing as an example. So creating living cells and cell components. So the whole trend around plant-based, new protein, what we call new food, has to continue also because of that context of climate change and additional dietary needs. And we just can't get away from that.
Sure. You mentioned that collaboration, and it, probably a good point to point out that we have made podcasts in the past with Tetra Pak, and we did one specifically about some of your collaborative work. But if people go to the Food Matters Live website and search Tetra Pak, they'll see all the past episodes that we've made together. Looking at food loss and waste then, so I mean, these are huge issues for the food system, and I wonder how Tetra Pak's tackling those.
Yeah, well, one third of the food is being wasted across the value chain, right? And unfortunately, still, because of all processing equipment and system, there's also too much food loss and food waste during the food processing and packing system. And that comes with a price on the earth because of the greenhouse gas impact. So typically we believe, or not we believe, science says that food loss and waste accounts for 10% of the greenhouse gas emissions only. At the same time, as I've mentioned, we have 2 billion people struggling to get regular access to sufficient food. So again, that's the observation. And because of the role that we have within that value chain, because of the thousands of equipments that we have installed at food players, that's where, thanks to the services that we have, thanks to the new portfolio that we have as solutions, we can actually drastically cut the food loss and the food waste during the processing phase of the food transformation. An example that I really like is actually when you look at the concept of byproducts. So when you produce orange juice, as an example, or a soy drink or soy milk, as we can call them in some countries, historically speaking, there were some byproduct or waste. Orange peel on one end, or the soya beans. And those were just thrown away. That has an impact on the quality of the soil, pollution of the soil, impact on greenhouse gas. And actually, it's a cost also for the food players. Well, we have developed technology at Tetra Pak with our product development centers to be able typically to process what we call a whole soya, so the entire soybean. The benefit is that you have much less waste. Actually, you increase the fiber and the protein content of the drink. The example of the orange peel, I could have used it with a product that we do consume a lot during summertime or all year long, which is beer. So with beer comes also a waste product originally, which is called brewer's spent grains. And that product, if you go to a beer production facility, that product gets spoiled super rapidly. So in the past, this was basically thrown away. It is still massively thrown away with risk of pollution. Now we have patented a sterilization technology for this brewer's spent grain, which turns this byproduct, this waste, this byproduct of brewing into a liquid ingredient for plant-based drinks, which also increases the fiber and protein content. So it's really a win-win. So that's why I think technology has to be looked into when it comes to the topic of food waste and loss. Technology is a provider of massive solutions, and that's where Tetra Pak has the expertise really to come up with solutions.
Yeah, and as you say, that sort of win-win scenario, I suppose, is really important, isn't it? Because it's not just, I suppose, it's the double advantage. It's not just about reducing waste. It's also about benefiting another product down the line, and that can only be a good thing.
Yeah, exactly.
So let's look at some of the opportunities and challenges then, and perhaps on the economic side. So what are the economic opportunities and challenges that you foresee in the transition towards more sustainable food systems?
Yeah, well, let me start by the, in a way, the negative or the challenges. The capital costs for businesses right now to transition to best-in-class equipment represent a major challenge. Especially due to the initial investment that is required. Why am I mentioning this? Is that in the world of food production, which we kind of all know is kind of a thin margin world. Well, what is best in class is actually to keep your equipment as long as possible. And what we do see in factories often are equipment that have been there for over 10 to 30 years, and therefore you have, well, depreciation costs of those equipment that are going over 10 and 30 years. Therefore, to be able to replace those equipment in place, you need to have a proper value proposition. On one end, we do see actually in some parts of the world interesting move from regulatory, from regulations, from financing, to being able to actually upgrade the industry, and that's good. But we can't rely only on regulations. And that's where I think we need to come up with the design of solutions that meet the market needs. What does it mean? It needs to be cost competitive and answer to the customers and consumers' requests. So cost competitive is one thing. How do you reach cost competitiveness and match sustainability? Well, I tend to say that what happens in the factory is that when you have an efficient equipment, you have an efficient equipment because it uses less energy. It can be electricity as energy. It uses less water and it produces less waste. And that's actually the magical equation for sustainability. It's a magical equation for cost competitiveness. So what happens on the floor of food players is that the cost competitiveness comes with a sustainability superiority. That's maybe less true when you think about the packaging world. But long story short, what we have been focusing a lot at Tetra Pak on is innovation that cuts down the OPEX, the operational cost of our customers, so that they can rapidly absorb the potential increase of CAPEX, which are linked to the innovation. So that's actually quite an interesting trend that we are seeing on the market, and a strong demand towards those more efficient equipment. Also at a time, let's be realistic, at a time where many of the companies have to reach ambitious climate targets. And that's where Tetra Pak also has an important role to play to coach our food customers to really make the transition.
Now, the transformation of food systems spans the entire value chain. And I wonder if this was a reason behind your recent announcement of Tetra Pak's approach to nature.
Definitely. A big yes. According to the IPBES, so the Intergovernmental Science Policy Platform on Biodiversity and Ecosystem Services, so basically the IPCC for Nature, same as climate, IPCC Climate, IPBES is for biodiversity in nature. Well, according to the IPBS, nature is deteriorating at rates unprecedented in human history. And that's largely due to human activity or the impact of climate change on nature. And the food value chain is highly dependent on nature. Like there's no food being produced without nature. Sound basic, but our friends or colleagues working typically in the world of chemistry or oil and gas have much less of that issue. And it's the same for Tetra Pak, right? If we look at our overall value chain, so we have customers in the food value chain, so they need to be able to grow and access raw materials coming from nature, mostly, if not exclusively, and to being able to produce our packaging, which are mostly fiber-based, we also need to have access to responsibly and well-managed forest. So we have a business which is exposed. We have a responsibility as well, the same as we have on climate and the food system transformation. And we believe the same way that we have done with climate in really driving the decarbonization of the value chain, that we can do the same with a nature positive approach, re-establishing, I would say, proper forest ecosystem and ensuring that people can live upon the ecosystem they depend on. Water is actually also another point that we have been looking into the approach to nature. So it's only biodiversity, it's only about forest. Water is a common good. And because of especially climate change, but also the impact of industry, the access worldwide to safe water is challenged. Also in regions where you wouldn't expect. If we have listeners from the north of France, Belgium, Netherlands, Germany, that's areas where, well, it's raining a lot, much more than in Spain, for example. And yet, because of the massive use of water by industries, not only food industry, but overall, because of quality issues, what the World Resource Institute says us is that actually Benelux plus Germany is part of the world which will be the most challenged when it comes to access to water. I mentioned briefly Spain, but Catalonia, so the region around Barcelona, has suffered a massive drought now for the past 3 years, up to the point that the government of Catalonia had to issue almost like a law forcing industrial to reduce their consumption of water by more than 30%. So we have to recognize the interdependency between nature, climate, food systems, and we have to know what is our impact, where are the risks, and where we can take action if we want to have a thriving business and a sustainable business. And that's where Tetra Pak, we have introduced this approach to nature, which is that comprehensive framework, looking at how we can halt and reverse nature loss, enhance water security. And basically, we have 25 targets across the value chain. And this is really a guide for us to take actions right away. And we will have to work, like we are doing on climate, we will have to work with our suppliers, but also with our customers, the food players, to really accelerate in that area.
Okay. On those 25 targets then, so how were they developed? How did you come about them? And what actions have been taken so far?
Okay, so in full transparency, while we might have wanted to do it on our own, this is an area which is new for many, many companies. Reason why we had to go with the support of external biodiversity and water expert consultancies group. And we had, once again, a science-based approach. So we conducted an assessment of the impacts, dependencies, risk and opportunities of our value chain on nature with a specific focus on biodiversity and water, because that's what is very material for Tetra Pak. And using this information, that's where we have structured our approach to nature by prioritizing areas where we can make the greatest contribution to halting and reversing nature loss, enhancing water security. And that's where the 25 targets comes in. And to be able to have the best impact, but also to be efficient in the way we are working, we have separated those targets per part of the value chain. So we have targets for typically our suppliers. As an example, we are requesting our high impact suppliers to conduct an assessment of their nature related impacts and to have action plan to address those impacts. We are asking them to have certification and traceability for all the materials that they provide to us. It's the case already today for the materials that we have for our packaging materials, but not yet the case for everything we buy. Other part of the value chain, important, our own production site. So we have initiated nature-related assessment of our own production site, and we have now put in place strong water reduction targets in our 25-plus production site. Same goes with the what we call VOC, the volatile organic compounds, so air pollution. Same goes with strong targets on our sites, and we actually have deployed a new technology to reduce those VOCs. When it comes to the impact on nature of what happens with our customers, so the food players, it is linked to our portfolio. And that's where the story of what we have been discussing around the food system transformation gets together with the nature story. Because when you act on reducing the use of energy, reducing the use of water, reducing the waste and loss that comes with the processing of your product or the packing of your product, well, you de facto reduce your impact on nature.
Okay. What work is Tetra Pak doing to minimize the adverse effects of land use in line with Sustainable Development Goal 15?
Okay, so when you talk about land use, that's where for Tetra Pak it basically translates into our packaging business. Why? Because Tetra Pak packages are mostly made of paper, so fiber-based. It's more than 70% of the package which is made from fiber. And the production of wood for paper board that we use is basically responsible for 85% of the land footprint of our supply base. So as I mentioned, we've done that strong analysis to understand, okay, what do we source? What is the impact on water? What is the impact of land? What do we need to prioritize? So 85% of our land footprint is linked to the production of wood for paper board. But Tetra Pak does not own or manage any forests, right? So it means that we have to set, and we have set actually, strong purchase requirements to protect biodiversity and to promote sustainable forest management. We keep on strengthening our procedure for responsible sourcing of paper board. So that's the minimum sustainability requirements our suppliers need to comply if they want to be able to sell to us their product, and that's part of any contracts that paperboard suppliers have with us. The approach to nature is also one step forward, because we are taking that approach that we've had historically on paperboard to polymers, aluminium players. So we want to ensure that we have the traceability there of 100% of the material that we buy. We also are asking our suppliers to conduct an assessment of their impacts on nature, as I mentioned, and that's also a critical path or critical action to improve the impact that Tetra Pak can have through its sourcing procedure. And all the work that we have been doing, forcing our suppliers to level up on the understanding of the impact and on taking actions, is something that has been consistently recognized by CDP, ex-carbon disclosure program. Tetra Pak has actually received this A-list score on forest program for 7 years now. So that's quite impressive. Only 2% of the company worldwide have achieved that A score out of 21,000 companies that have been assessed.
Okay. We spoke earlier a bit about water, and I wonder if we could talk a bit about water resilience. And, you know, it is such a huge issue when it comes to sustainability. And I wonder what Tetra Pak are doing in this respect.
Yeah. I actually do wonder if you know how much of water we need to use to be able to produce a person's daily food intake.
Oh no, I don't. I like the question though. I mean, what are we talking in liters? I don't know. Yeah. I would have said a few liters, a handful of liters.
Okay. Well, actually, if you look at your average daily food intake, breakfast, meal, dinner, well, an average globally, you need between 2,000 to 5,000 liters of water.
Oh, wow.
That's the equivalent of 10 big baths.
Wow. Well, I was well off anyway.
So that's a lot. And as we've mentioned, with an inefficient system, at the same time with growing need, the pressure that is related, that is linked to the food production on water resources will continue to increase. Actually, water in the food industry would deserve its own episode. We could talk for hours on the flows of water. But to your questions, what is Tetra Pak doing in this respect, right? So first of all, we are looking into our own operations, the production of packaging materials, of caps, of machines, means that we do use water, sometimes in water basins that are under stress. So we have put systems to drastically reduce the use of water, to recirculate, recycle water. So that's what happens within our own operations. And then there's the whole point about how we can downstream, so with the food players, look into helping them to reduce water. So looking at the overall footprint, 35% of the water which is being used on Tetra Pak's value chain overall is related to our equipment in use. So when you have an equipment to transform a liquid, let's say milk, into powder, well, there's water being used somehow. Or when you actually get a raw material, which is powder, and then you need to transform it into a liquid, well, there's water being used somehow. When you sterilize, there's water being used in the system. And that's where the new development that we have put in place with our processing equipment helps to drastically reduce water. So by design, we have this minus 50% actually water use compared to the previous best practices solutions. And for the food system players, we also have a great product solutions. It's actually a machine which basically does water recovery and water recycling. And it can help customers, the food players, or customers, the food players, to reuse up to 99% of the water they use in their production. So if you're a player typically in Catalonia, where from day one to day two, you had to reduce by more than 30%, this type of equipment have enabled them to continue producing and therefore give consumers access to food. It's an area where the knowledge is really growing all across. And I must say that I'm happy to be part since 2022 of the Alliance for Water Stewardship, AWS, which is a network where businesses and NGOs and public sector organizations are meeting to share best practices and understand how we can also shape, well, regulations and rules to ensure that we have water resiliency. And similar to what we have done on climate and nature, we also have decided to have our performance being evaluated by CDP. So last year was the first time that we went to CDP and say, please score us on water security. And for the first time, actually, we had a A minus, so cementing really the position that Tetra Pak has on sustainability topics, climate, forest, and water. And we are really willing to push that agenda, because at the end of the day, it's about ensuring that we can continue to produce food and give people access to safe and available food, right, everywhere.
Fantastic. Just finally, Jules, how is the approach to nature framework applied to Tetra Pak's packaging processes?
Yeah. Well, it's true that we have discussed a lot about Tetra Pak processing business. We need not to forget the positive impact that you can have through the use of Tetra Pak fiber-based packaging. And actually, within our approach to nature, similar, by the way, to our food system transformation pathway, there are a number of targets that relate specifically to our packaging solutions. I've mentioned, especially at some point of the discussion, the targets that are related to the sourcing of raw materials, paper, aluminium, as an example. So we aim to have 100% of the Tetra Pak's raw materials, with the most significant land print originated from certified or controlled sources. And that target is met for paperboard and plant-based polymer. And we are working towards meeting that target on aluminium. When it comes to packaging, the production of packaging comes with some type of pollution. Volatile organic compounds, VOC, is something that we have been looking into quite a lot. And we aim to eradicate actually all the waste in the production, and to achieve this 50% reduction in VOC, volatile organic compounds. And we also need to look into the end of the life, so ensuring that all our packaging gets recycled. And to ensure that, we need to make sure that the new packaging solutions are designed according to the Design for Recycling initiatives and regulations that we have worldwide. We need to continue to accelerate and invest like we have been doing, invest into recycling operations on the ground. We've invested more than 30 million euros, as an example, last year to boost that recycling value chain. Because every pack that gets recycled, you avoid it being ending into a landfill, which has an impact on nature. So we know that we must hold ourselves accountable. And as I hope you've understood, we are very much committing to doing so and leading really a key role into the transition to a secure, resilient, and sustainable food system.
Fantastic. Gilles Tisserand, that has been absolutely fascinating. Thank you so much for taking the time to come onto the podcast and join us again for another episode.
Thanks for the discussion. Looking forward to speaking to you again.
Thank you for listening to that episode of the Food Matters Live podcast. Now, before we wrap up, we have some exciting news to share. Food Matters Live is returning this autumn with events in Ascot, Manchester, and for the first time, Dublin. Join us as we inspire the future of food. Whether you're looking to solve innovation challenges, explore positive nutrition trends, or learn strategies for sourcing sustainable ingredients, these events are designed for you. Learn more and sign up at foodmatterslive.com. We look forward to seeing you there.